CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business. CityTalk 105.9.
Good morning and welcome to City Talk's Business with Frank McKenna on CityTalk 105.9. My name's Roger Jonas, I'm the events manager from downtown Liverpool in business, and I'll be taking the reins this morning as Mr. Mack is topping up his tan in sunnier climes. Before we continue this morning, on behalf of downtown, I'd just like to pay tribute to a lady who has been described by her colleagues as brimming with ideas and knowledge, a lady whose creativity, passion and drive have significantly helped to shape the future of Liverpool. Claire McEwan, who worked with Radio River Media, played a pivotal role in the success of the Liverpool Pavilion at the World Expo in Shanghai and was widely recognised as one of the city's brightest creative sparks. Now, sadly, Claire was killed tragically in a road accident last weekend, and our thoughts are very much with Claire's family and her work colleagues and her friends, and she will be sorely missed. Right, with that sad news over, let's continue. My studio guests this morning represent an industry that over decades has put Liverpool on the global map, an industry that's contributed to the steady growth of the visitor economy, and an industry that creates substantial employment throughout the region. I'm, of course, referring to the music and creative industry. I'm joined this morning by four experts and entrepreneurs who have all made a significant input into the development of Merseyside's creative culture. My first guest is David Piccellini. I hope I've got your name right there,
That's
David.
That's close enough.
That'll do. A man with a rich history in the business, an enviable phone book of contacts, and the man responsible for delivering the recent and massively successful Sound City Music Festival in Liverpool. My second guest is Kevin McManus. Now, Kevin is the head of creative and digital with Merseyside Acme, an agency that has over the past 12 years made some incredible waves and offered support to the creative sector, and now under the umbrella of Liverpool Vision. And last but not least, my final guests are Jen Corrigan and Carl Connor. Now, they're business partners in Fierce Management, a city-based music management and entertainment company. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Right. As we're talking about the creative industry, let's keep it light. Let's keep the chat on a nice even keel. Let's not argue with each other too much, but let's be as controversial as we can.
Let's leave now then.
I'm going to start with you, David. I kind of feel I'm almost in the presence of music royalty with you being here. I'm not suggesting you're an old queen or anything like that. No, certainly not.
It's been said before.
Sound City, 3-day musical festival that ran from 19th to the 21st of May this year. A massive success. I think it's been going for, 8 years? No, since 2008, was it?
Yeah, it was launched. It was launched in Liverpool as part of the Capital of Culture. I mean, it's interesting, Kevin's with us in the studio today because he was one of them, well, the instigator behind it, really, within his role at Acme. And it was me and him who kind of hatched the plan together, really, to launch Sound City. Mm-hmm. So it's been running 4 years in Liverpool, but we've been running events at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas, for the last 6 years.
Is that what you based Sound City on?
Yeah, loosely, it's based on that. I mean, as you said, you know, I've been going to these things longer than I care to imagine, really. So from the late 80s of going to an event called the New Music Seminar in New York, which was, I guess, the first of those types of kind of industry stroke music conferences. Before that, you had things like MIDEM in Cannes, which has been running for 40-odd years now, which it could be argued is a bit stale and a bit kind of well-worn these days. But there's a lot of these things. I worked on in the city in Manchester for years.
You worked with Tony Wilson for a long while, didn't you?
Well, I worked with the label and with Tony on that and the sponsorship
side. You're referring to Factory, I guess.
At Factory Rob's Records with Rob Gretton after that.
So,
you know, there are a lot of these things that go on. I guess with Liverpool Sound City, what we've done is kind of pinched the best bits of them all, really, and discarded the bits that aren't that great. And so what it is a kind of a configuration of what we would consider to be the best of those things. But the key thing of Liverpool Sound City is really to not put Liverpool on the map, because Liverpool's on the map anyway. You know, it's a stronger brand. I mean, I was reading this week about Brand Manchester, really, and about how they're culturally, through the Manchester International Festival, trying to, if you want, re-establish or establish themselves as the cultural centre, if you want, of culture within the UK. Now, I would argue they're doing a really, really good job of it, but I would say we've got more of a right to stamp that than they have, really, in terms of what we do. But Manchester are just a very, very good at marketing themselves and getting those points across.
Is Liverpool not?
I think we're getting better at it.
Okay.
I think since the year of culture, we're certainly getting better at it. And I think certainly we've got a council now that recognises that.
It's been one of my criticisms for a long time that Liverpool, some of the significant things that happen here in terms of music and culture and theatre and the whole gamut, we're not very good at shouting about ourselves. We tend to keep it to ourselves.
Well, we're a bit parochial. We're good at shouting about it to each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're good at kind of shouting it within our back garden, if you want. I think one of the key things that we've got to get better at is selling the brand of Liverpool and culture, you know, abroad, really, on a UK perspective, on a European perspective and on an international stage. And I think we can learn things from the way Manchester do things there, because there's no doubt we do some absolutely amazing things within the city in terms of managing talent, in terms of the kind of the way the public bodies kind of engage with it. You know, Acme was years ahead of its time in terms of what they did, you know. But you know, it's not really sung that loudly from the hilltops about how great that was, about that kind of intervention, really.
Well, let's do a bit of singing now, because, do you know, unfortunately, I was out of the city during Sound City, but some of my colleagues went to some of the gigs. Mm-hmm. And we're talking here hundreds of musicians in dozens and dozens of venues across the city. I mean, that you must have seen that grown since 2008.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we put on, in the first year, in 2008, we put on just over 200 bands, and we did around about 2,000 wristbands, or 2,000 sales, if you want, with that, and we had a couple of hundred people at the conference. This year, we had 2,500 registered delegates at the conference. We had 35,000 people in the city, over 12,000 wristband sales, but 35,000 people attending the events that we did, and 366 bands from over 23 different countries.
It's phenomenal.
So, you know, it is a big thing, yeah.
I mean, I said in the introduction that you know, you've got a rich phone book of contacts. I believe back in the early days, you paid Florence and the Machine something like £200, didn't you?
We did, yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't book it, to be honest. It's one of those great things. It's a great soundbite. But, you know, it was we've got great bookers who work with us. You know, the strength of Sound City is the strength of the team, really.
Yeah.
You know, I just end up being the person that kind of shouts about it.
You take all the credit.
I've got the biggest mouth. Well, I'll take all the credit, but in the same way as the News of the World, I would take all the flack, I would thought, and I'd have fallen on my sword if it went wrong, like, you know. But it's
you're not hacking into Robbie Williams's text, are you?
No,
like
no,
that?
No, no. Yeah, I'd have to check my phone if it'd been hacked into. I don't think it's that interesting.
Allegedly hacked
into.
Some
of my private messages
this,
might be more
legal.
Interesting than the business ones. But we won't go into that. But, you know, we famously got Florence and the Machine for £200 and a number of other acts, Santa Gold, you know, but Eliza Doolittle, who I noticed played Chester Rocks a couple of weeks ago,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We paid £50 for her when we first brought her to Liverpool, you know, and put her in Parr Street Studios. So, you know, I think that's the key thing with Sound City. It's about, yes, some of the big names that come through, but it's really about the business that comes out of it. I mean, it's about saying, well, you don't have to be, you know, Fierce Management, for example, who are here, you don't have to go to London to do it anymore. You're 2 hours on a train away from London. If Joe has anything to do with it, we'll have two trains an hour as well. And it will be, you know, you don't have to, you know, you can go down to London, you can be in and out in one day, you can talk through technology, you can, you know, use technology to an advantage. And so you can stay here now in Liverpool to do the business, really. You don't have to, like we had to in the past, really, go down to London to move there, because we all had to move there when I was younger. You had to do it, really, in many ways, but you don't have to now.
I think it's interesting, you know, looking at some of the intelligence about the Sound City. The objective, I guess, is to expose new music. Is am I right?
And
there?
Create business. The primary objective, the honeypot is the music, really, is what we do. So in other words, we market it on the back of some of the great talent and the artists that we bring in from all over the world. But the primary focus of it is doing business, really.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that we're judged on, you know, because we get limited amounts of public funding coming into it, which, of course, is getting more and more difficult. But one of the things that we're measured on in terms of that is the contract signed, really. So not soft outputs, but in terms of how much money we're bringing into the region. And I think year on year, you know, looking at this year, we've brought in, it's been measured that it's around about £12 million that's come into businesses within the region. Now, that's the important bit. And that's the bit that sexy to me, in terms of, because that's the bit that makes people believe that they can stay here and gives them the confidence to stay in the Liverpool City region to do their business.
It also gives the industry a mass amount of credibility.
Absolutely. And when we're bringing people like Seymour Stein, who came again this year on his own back, you know, Seymour, who famously discovered Madonna and Talking Heads and the Ramones and so on, and then comes back here for a second year running on his own steam this year. Why? Because he had such an amazing time in Liverpool last year. Yes, he saw some great bands, and he even signed one of them when he was here last year. But, you know, more importantly, he said he did some good business and he met some great people while he's here. And he's great because he becomes an apostle for the city, who goes out saying, you know what, Liverpool's where it's at now. That's where you need to be.
Wow, to be kind of doing somebody of that calibre to make that kind of statement's pretty impressive.
Absolutely.
What if a band wants to play at Sound City, how do they go about engaging?
We have an application process, so that will open in October again of this year. I mean, this year we had over 3,500 applications for bands to play from all over the world, you know. And I think that's testament to where we've come in a short space of 4 years, really. I mean, we are really young yet, but we're very ambitious. I mean, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to be announcing two new initiatives that are going to be part of Sound City for 2012. And I can't mention them on air now. I can mention them when there's no microphones on to all of us. But when people see what we're announcing in a couple of weeks' time, that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a huge leap forward again for 2012.
Okay, watch this space
watch
then.
This space, yeah.
Good. I've got to ask you, you know, in your opinion, what is it that makes a good band? What is it that makes good music?
Good songs. It's all about the song, really, you know. So everything is about the song. And then, you know, I think, you know, going in the day when I was growing up working in A&R and so on, you could sign a band on the strength of a pair of trainers. If they had the right trainers on, you could sign them, you know. Hmm. But those days are pretty much gone, really, you know. I think now everything now is about the song. And then it's about all those other vital ingredients. So in terms of, okay, if we got the right raw material, beyond that, what do they look like? How do they interview? Do they kind of, have they got a strong work ethic? What are they like live?
How much money can they make you?
Potentially, yeah, but, you know, it's not, it's, you know, a lot of, you know, Jen and Carl can talk about, you know, I don't know, but they might not be able to talk about their business models based on some of the artists, but I would say that, you know, some business models are based upon 12-month project plans, you know, so you might say, well, I can make, if I invest X into this band, I can make X times 2, I reckon, out of them in 12 months, and that might be all it's got. Now, the band or the artist might not believe that that's what they're worth, but, you know, the reality of the business is, it might be that as you're making a kind of business assumption about it, that you think, well, we might be able to make something out of it, but it's going to be within a short, sharp space of time. Other artists are what you might call album artists, or what you used to call album artists. That's getting more and more difficult now because, you know, there's, in terms of the way young people consume music now, they don't think about it in terms of albums. They think about it in terms of songs. And really, they don't consume music in the same way as my generation consumed it, or dare I say, even Jen's and Carl's generation consumed it, you know, because, you know, despite their tender age, they're still probably older than the model that's yet to be defined, really.
Yeah.
And that's going to be kids who define that. I mean, my young son is 13, and he calls me, he says, don't give me any CDs because the kids in the playground think I'm a nerd. Now, when your mates think you're a nerd for having a CD, that's a problem. And when kids think music is free, and it's always been free, always been free, then it's a very difficult job to convince someone to pay for something when it's always been free all my life.
We're coming up to a break. I just want one comment from you about your thoughts on illegal downloads and how that's affecting the industry.
I think it's great, illegal downloading. You know, it's kind of... I wasn't expecting that. Well, no, because, you know, what are you going to do? You can't... it's a bit like trying to beat the waves back, isn't it? You know, that's technology. That's the, so technology is once again defined the way the industry should be. It's a bit like without the electric guitar, we would never have had Jimi Hendrix. What are you going to... You know, we didn't dismiss technology and say, right, no, we all played acoustics before then. We need electric. So illegal downloading is fantastic. It's about how we harness it.
Okay, you mentioned technology there. We'll be talking about that shortly after the break.
Downtown Liverpool in business. City Talk 105.9.
Hi, welcome back. We've just heard from Dave Piccolini from Sound City. I'm also joined by Kevin McManus from Merseyside Acme. And from Fierce Management, we've got Jen Corrigan and we've got Carl Connor. Welcome back, chaps. Kevin, Merseyside Acme. It's been around for, what, 12 years now, is it?
12, 13 years, yeah.
Yeah. Just give us a little bit of a brief on before you merged with Vision and you brought into the thong of under the umbrella of Vision, give us a little bit of a brief on Merseyside Acme.
It's a very simple mission. It's there to support the creative industries, which covers things like, as well as music industry, film, TV, creative media, digital marketing companies, through to visual arts and performing arts. So it's right across the board. And the mission is to make those businesses better performing, generate more jobs, create more turnover, develop the Liverpool economy. And it's as simple as that. The way we've tried to do that over the years has varied as, you know, times have changed and things. And back at the start in 97, I think it was, creative and digital industries were still seen as a little bit odd and a bit out of the mainstream. And not,
has that changed?
I think it's most policy statements nationally, regionally, locally always refer to creative and digital industries as a driver for growth. And luckily, I mean, in Liverpool, the city and in Liverpool Vision are behind that. I think sometimes in other places and nationally it's said, but I still think there's an awful lot of people who don't quite get the importance of it. I mean, it's, you know, radio is digital. The stuff that impacts on people's lives every day is because of creative and digital industries, and it goes through into all the other industries as well. You know, the design of and manufacturing of stuff is, a lot of it's down to creative people coming up with designs for cars or whatever. So it's everywhere. And I suppose we were, as Dave just said before, Acme was a bit ahead of the game, which created problems in some ways, but it enabled us to try things out. And, you know, I still get lots of calls from people nationally and internationally trying to look at models that we've used over the years and stuff. So we are seen as a bit of a, you know, as a pathfinder in that sort of area.
And that's interesting, and obviously since you've been brought under the umbrella of Liverpool Vision, have you noticed any structural, or has there been any structural change in the way that you operate?
Not really, because we've always been a tiny team. We've always been fairly lean, which reflects the sector in a way. I mean, most of the creative industries, there's an awful lot of freelancers, micro businesses, one to three, and lots of, you know, in their one to ten category, and Acme's always sort of followed that model with, you know, a tiny core team of, well, at the moment it's me, it's one person.
One person. Let's hope it doesn't get any smaller.
It's me as the full-time employee, and then I've got Cathy Skelly, who works with me on a freelance basis and does lots of work, project management and stuff, and Dave Parrish does lots of one-to-ones with businesses, but they're employed on a freelance, contracted on a freelance basis, which is the way, you know, an awful lot of creative companies work. You keep your core costs down, and then you bring in freelancers and other people when you need them. And
so the core things that I guess you do, you have a news service. That's an online news service, I guess. Kin, can you tell me a bit more about this? Is this the online creative network that you set up?
It is. It's somewhere where I think we were well ahead of the curve, really. We set up Kin, and it's with Claire McKeown, who you mentioned at the start. Claire was the main driving force behind Kin. It was way before LinkedIn and those other sorts of professional networks and online things. We went out there and spoke to businesses, and people were telling us what they wanted was this sort of online forum where we could connect businesses up. And we set up Kin to Kin back, it must be 6-7 years ago now. It's a long time ago. And then people started telling us that they wanted physical network meetings as well. And its objective was just to provide a platform for creative businesses in Liverpool and the city region to have a showcase. So if you're a music business, you could put your music on there. If you have film or video, you could put a little clip on there and provide a platform for people to do business. So if you were a filmmaker looking for someone who did animation, you can put a poster on Kin saying I need somebody who does animation, and it's worked. I mean, it's a very simple idea, I think, but all the best ideas are, and it's worked. People have got work from it. It's fostered collaborations between business, which is vital in our sector, and it's a simple product which is effective.
And what's your relationship? I mean, please, Dave, do feel free to join in here.
What... I was assisting to Kev there. I was engrossed.
What's the relationship between you two?
Well, we've known we've known each other for a very long time. In a previous life, I was writing for NME about Liverpool music and stuff. I was an old music journalist, and Dave, which I know is hard to believe now, Dave was actually a singer in an indie band which got signed to a major label.
We'll get a tune out of him later.
And so I interviewed Dave then, and we just used to normally see each other, to be honest, normally when we were drunk in clubs or something or at gigs.
Now, is this not something that is in line with the music industry and the creative industry?
Well, it's funny he says it drunk at gigs, but, you know, that's where the best business is done in our business, really, you know. Most business is done in kind of the unearthly hours of the night. Or they're hatched then, you know, that's when the great plans are hatched, and then they're kind of cemented, in more sober moments, should we say, like, you know. But you know, that is the nature of the business. And I think that's why people do struggle to come to terms with it, particularly, you know, when you're talking about the public sector intervention for it, really. You know, when you start talking about, for example, when we do things at South by Southwest, and you go to people like Kevin, who is essentially a broker, really. You know, so you go to people like Kevin, who understands the way we talk, and then he kind of reinterprets that to people, you know, in other ways that will either open the doors for money or whatever else it might be. Because when you go to Kevin and I say, Kevin, we should be doing parties at South by Southwest and putting on a load of bands, you know, and you're talking that language, Kevin then says, okay, then we need to reinterpret that to turn on if you want people, particularly in the early days of before lots of people are doing parties at South by Southwest now, you know, in terms of trade bodies and so on. But Liverpool was the first place to be doing it, really, under the banner of the Northwest, I guess. You know, and so we kind of led the way in that as well. You know, so it's important that you get, as the industry or the record industry shrinks, and as it gets harder and harder if you want to define career paths for our artists or whatever else it might be, then it is important that you get that intervention. What you don't want is a load of bureaucrats getting involved in something and trying to pretend they're cool, really. It's a bit like Tony Blair, you know, when he wore them open neck shirts and stuff and invited everyone round to number 10, really.
I thought he looked really cool.
It's about how you do it, really, I suppose. Because there's no doubt, I think anyway, that you do need them interventions now.
So you come up with the ideas, Kevin does the logistics and puts flesh on the bones and
then everybody's happy, really. You know, and I think it's you're measured by your results in the same ways you would be if it was a sponsorship deal, in the same ways you would be if it was any other commercial proposition, really. Mm. I think that's the key thing.
Liverpool Vision and the City Council are both really supportive and on board of it, because it hits lots of, you know, key points for them. It's Sound City brings in international businesses, it helps Liverpool companies to do business on an international scale. When we do Sound City in America or Dubai or wherever, it gets opportunities for Liverpool companies to go out there and do business over there. And it's also about selling the city. Touched on it briefly before, but it's shown Liverpool as a modern international city where it's a great place to live, it's a great place to do business.
How did the recession hit the music industry in Liverpool, do you think?
In the last few years? Again, it's because the sector tends to be quite small and flexible. It's probably more resistant to those sort of ups and downs than other things. I mean, the national music industry has undergone lots and lots of changes and I think it didn't. Business model's broke, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it did in different ways. If you look at the life sector, you know, everyone's talking about how buoyant that is. It's not, you know. If you look at some of the kind of mid-level venues in the in our city, as an example, but you could take any UK city, you know, they're not doing that well, really. Year on year, their profits are down. You know, if you look at pubs, for example, you know, which was a great source of new talent, you've only got to drive around any city now or any corner, and you're seeing pubs that are being closed, you know. So that, again, is a sign of how the recession, I guess, has hit the spending power.
Festivals to take that and shows and the huge stars, that they're the ones that are driving up the figures on the live show.
That's right, yeah. I think the interesting thing about it...
You've got to treat them separately, though, surely.
Yeah, you have. But I think the interesting thing, and again, when Jen and Carl talk about it, but it's how buoyant the actual, the artistic sector is. Because I think if you look back, you know, at the last... time I'm kind of old enough to remember, you know, that kind of late 70s, early 80s, Thatcher era. You know, it was a great time for music coming out of the city. The, you know, we were never... There was a real creative stream at that time with bands like the Bunnymen, Teardrop Explodes, yeah. China Crisis, and so on and so on and so on. You know,
I mean, Liverpool's had
on.
A tremendous amount of number ones in the charts. I mean, I think that's something we've celebrated at one of our dinners at Liverpool a couple of years ago. And I was amazed when we were doing the research... as to, you know, how many bands Liverpool's turned out, but the success of those bands. And it kind of leads me on to wonder, do we focus in Liverpool too much on kind of the musical heritage and the success of bands in the past, rather than shift the goalposts and or move
well,
the cheese?
Well, we don't. We're all about looking forward, really. You know, it's all about going forward. By the same token, we're not embarrassed of it, you know. So I was noticing, it's funny because I think we went through an embarrassing period. It's almost like we've been through that bit now, you know, where you kind of, the Beatles were amazing, you know, to mention the elephant in the corner. They were amazing. We went through that bit where we were embarrassed of them for a bit when we're trying to find our new meaning, if you want. Now we're kind of proud of them again, saying, okay, then we can, you know, we recognise there's a pound to be made from the marks in a Beatles heritage and the things it can do for the city. But we can't just keep looking back at that. You know, we talked about Manchester before. I noticed in a recent article just how embarrassed they are. A lot of the new bands coming through, like Everything and Dutch Uncles and a number of those bands that are coming out of Manchester at the moment, saying how fed up to the back teeth they are of having the Manchester thing rammed down their throat, and the Smiths and Happy Mondays and the Stone Roses and all that, saying, well, that was gone, it's history, you know, we can't be nostalgic. So, you know, even the Manx are getting accused of kind of looking back now, really, you know.
But me and Dave have both been involved in the UNESCO bid to be a city of music, which, you know, the bid should be going soon, I'm sure that we will be successful in it. But that's about like showing Liverpool as a you know, a city that is renowned for its music, and it can't just be about the heritage. It's got to be about the stuff that's going on now, the stuff that's.
I think that's key, isn't it? You know, the heritage is something that we have to consider. But I think the way we've moved on, the kind of the renaissance, if you like, of Liverpool and what's happened to Liverpool in the last 5-10 years is phenomenal. You know, it's a real city to be proud of. We bang on about this quite a lot. Talking about controversy in music, you know, I read somewhere that, and I'm not sure if it was at your conference, to be honest, at Sound City, that Peter Hook, who is a very famous Joy Division musician, went up against Kev Cummings, the photographer, about copyright, on who owned the copyright or who should own the copyright on photographs that Cummings took. I mean... Is copyright still a massive, massive issue?
Copyright's always going to be an issue, isn't it? Really, it's because it's about where you build your walls, and about who owns what and who gets a slice of what. It was great with Hookie, because Hookie's never been in the same room as Kevin Cummings for about 9 years.
Oh, wow.
And so when I spoke to Kevin spoke to us about doing some work, because Kevin knows about this anyway, Kevin McManus knows about this, but Kevin Cummings spoke to us about coming to launch his new Joy Division book at Sound City. It's great, and he said, I'll do an interview with Stephen Morris, who of course was the drummer in Joy Division.
Yeah.
And I said, no, that'll be boring, because, you know, you and Stephen get on really well. I'll do it if you do it with Hookie. hooky. And of course he went, no, I don't want to do it with hooky. He'll rail me. He said, okay, well, we won't do it then. So in the end, he said he'd do it. And then we spoke to hooky and we got him in the room. And of course it was great because hooky did nothing but just slag him off the whole time, like, you know, saying, you've made more money out of Joy Division than I made. Now, of course, what hooky doesn't get, because in his kind of, what he doesn't realise himself, just how much he's raped the past in the sense of what he's done with the FAC name. You know, he's opened FAC 51 again, you know, with his club. You know, it's the God-given right to be able to do that. You know, that in itself, the copyright for that lies with New Order, really, primarily with New Order. And yet, you know, Hooky took in his God-given right that he could just do that and kind of trample over what is intellectual property,
We need to take into account, really, is that probably Cummins played a massive part in putting them on the map as well.
If you look at those photos that Kevin took of Joy Division in the snow and on the bridge in Withenshaw, you know, they're life-defining, and they actually defined the music as much as the music did itself.
Well, we'll come back to this a little later. It's time to put the kettle on once again.
Downtown Liverpool in business. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back. I'm not going to go through who we've got in the studio again because, I think you've heard them, Piccolini and McManus. Yeah, they've all gone. Everyone's... some great commentary on the industry. But now I want to move on, I guess, to sort of another side of the industry, if you like. We've got two guests with us, Jen Corrigan and Carl Connor, and they're business partners in Fierce Management. So... welcome to the studio. Thank you for being patient, having listened to these two. I never thought
couldn't
we'd
get
shut them.
I know.
Which is great.
No surprise, really.
I guess you know each other, do you?
We do.
You do. All right. Well, let's bang some heads then. Let's tell us a little bit about Fierce Management first, so we can paint a picture of what your involvement in the industry is. Let's go to you, Jen.
Me? Okay. Basically, Fierce Management is an artist management company and an event production company. We started up by myself and Carl last year. It's kind of like the first year we've been doing it as the company. We know both Dave and Kevin through actually working to get Fierce together. Dave, we know quite a while ago, don't we, Dave?
We do.
From our time at Lipa, where we studied music, theatre and entertainment management, we know Dave through that. We also know Kevin, who helped us kind of start up Fierce through Acme, trying to, you know, get things together. So it started off, the two of us setting up a business after we'd come out of Lipa, decided that we wanted to stay in Liverpool to do it. And as Dave was mentioned before, it's so much easier now to do that through the means of, you know,
I was right at the beginning when I said we're almost in the presence of royalty here, of musical royalty with these two, aren't I?
Yeah. Everyone knows them. Everyone knows them. Everywhere you go, we always seem to meet up at things as well. So that's where the idea came from. We wanted to stay. We'd been in London. We'd done various things at Lipa and decided, obviously, when we came out of Lipa, once we got our degree and everything, we wanted to stay at home, wanted to stay at Liverpool and do it. So basically we set up the company from there.
Yeah, I think it's more about when we went back and did our degree a lot later in life than we were kids when we started it, and having worked with other people in the industry and, you know, seeing, having our own creative ideas and sort of, you know, being there thinking, why are they doing like that? Why are they doing this like that? We thought, you know what? We're at the time now, let's just do it. Let's just jump in at the deep end. We're at a great time now where, as Dave said before, you don't need to be in London. Mm. You can do everything from as long as you've got a computer and a phone line, away you go.
So I mean, when you take into account that you are considerably younger than Waldorf and Stadler here.
Considerably.
you've still got... sorry, gents. You've still got a mass amount of wealth of experience and years in the business, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, well, as I said, we both started, like, trying to get into the industry when we were about 18, and we've spent, like, the past 11 years doing so. As I said, the biggest thing that I would say was sort of like lit the flame for us starting our own business was we actually worked on the 2009 series of X Factor, working with the artist on the live side of things. Yeah. And that kind of cemented it really for us in our own minds of why we wanted to set up on our own.
We'll come back to the X Factor in a bit, because I'm quite intrigued. There's something again that I've read whilst I did my little bit of research, and this is what I say, I'm going to be a bit controversial here. But we'll come back to that in a sec.
I'll dig the dirt, you're all right.
Who do you represent?
Well, at the moment, we're focusing on two main acts that we're putting quite a lot of our time into. The first one is about a Liverpool band called 10 Reasons to Live that is fronted by Steve McNally, who was the lead singer of BB Mac, who were massive in the 90s. Yeah. Two number ones over in America, you know, worldwide sales going through the roof. And it's basically taking a modern grasp on the old rock sound, really. They've just finished recording their first album, and we're just in the process at the moment of putting together a number of live dates across the country. We're talking with a number of labels, but the way we work at the moment is we kind of get involved heavily on the creative side of things, because ever more so now, the labels aren't saying to us, right, okay, well, let's look at what artists you've got. Let's take them on and then see what we can record. We're in a situation where we can now have a bit of creative freedom because they're asking us to come to them with the product almost finished. They want the album.
God, that's changed.
Yeah, completely. It's a big change in the industry. It's just they just haven't got the funds anymore.
They also haven't got the courage.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think that's the thing, you know, because in the days in the last, if you discount the last 5 years, really, A&R, lots of A&R people, artist and repertoire people, you know, to bring out the acronym, they hid away, really. So in other words, they could be on six figure salaries and never sign anything. You know, they could be hidden away within the kind of depths of a major record label, be it EMI, be it Sony, be it Warner's, whatever it might be. Those days are now over, so really you're judged on your results now. And if you go into some of these record labels in London, I mean, Jen and Carl will be down there all the time. You know, I'm less and less in the places now because my role's changed. But what you see when you go in them is where there were floors and floors of people and A&R and marketing people and so on, now they're like funeral parlours. You know, there's lots and lots of people.
Definitely.
They've been culled, they've gone. But what the record industry is saying is, hey, everything's fine. We're all right. Don't worry. It's all good. When they're on their own, kind of over a pint or whatever else they're doing, they're really, really frightened. I nearly swore then, but they're really frightened, you know, because they don't really see an end to what is going on, really. And this is why it's great, and this is why it's bad. This is why it's great if you're 16 years of age or 15 years of age making music, because there are no rules anymore. There's no hierarchy anymore in the record business.
Well, so, like you said before, you know, it's the industry itself has been London-centric. Mm-hmm. Liverpool has a vast heritage in the music industry and has turned out a vast amount of significant musicians and bands. Mm-hmm. I guess what you're saying is that, you know, here in your home base, you've got to put far more work in than you've ever had to before order to reap the results. But is Liverpool big enough, and is the industry big enough in Liverpool to launch bands onto that stage? Or, and this is where we get a bit controversial, do we need the likes of the X Factor? Do we need the likes? I know, I read that when you were talking about the number of CDs that you get, the demo CDs that you get.
We don't get any CDs. That's people are playing online, so it's all done online.
It's all digital nowadays.
You did say that it almost became like a credible X Factor. You've made that sentence. That
I've said it in the past, yeah.
X Factor isn't necessarily have the credibility. Whereas you guys, you've worked with Zara, the band in the past, who got through. Was it Zara who got through?
No, we used to work with a girl band that were involved with the X Factor that got to a certain stage, and we were asked to take on.
Was it Zara?
What was
the name of the band?
They were. I don't really want to give them the advertisement, to be honest.
Oh, see, I knew you were going to get controversial. I've opened a can of worms here, haven't I?
Yeah, a band.
Yeah.
Band, they certainly ought to be.
A band. again, I mean, it swings and roundabouts. There's bad connotations. I mean, it can open the door from a live point of view, people who are sort of on that line of they want to get hold of anything X Factor related whatsoever. Mm. But then you obviously get, you know, the other side of the industry that I would say are proper musos that you know, rubbish X Factor off, you know, straight away.
There's no denying that shows like the X Factor give people a platform that might never have been noticed before. But then there's an opposing argument: if they were good enough, would they be noticed?
Yeah. You know, when I say a credible X Factor as well, I've actually got nothing against the X Factor. I actually watch it and I actually get sucked in like most of the rest of the country.
Yeah.
And unlike the rest of the country, I probably appreciate the earlier rounds, really, because it's almost like a freak show, really, that you're watching when you see the really, really awful ones. Like, you know, so it becomes like a circus act. But when I say not credible, I didn't think Opportunity Knox was credible when I was young either, but it served a purpose. There was a number of other programmes like that. So you really, you know, it's just cyclical, all of these things, really. X Factor is just one of many types of programmes like that. I think what's great about the X Factor, in many ways, is the way that, you know, if you look at the model in terms of the way it gets us to tune in every week, it gets us to vote for the ones that we want the best. And then all they give you is the one that you wanted in the first place at the end of it, and they get the contracts for it anyway. So it's so beautiful and simplistic that you've got to take your hat off to it in many ways. But it's not
like
for me. It's not for me, you know. It's not really...
How would you describe it, Jen?
I don't know. I mean,
business-wise, it's beautiful and simplistic.
Yeah. I can see it from that side. It is a really simple model at the end of the day, and it obviously works because you get the viewing figures, you get the record sales or the downloads or however you want to put it. I just think that it's kind of hard because coming from the opposite side, we've obviously worked on it and we've actually kind of seen the processes and the way things go, and we've actually turned down a job working with the X Factor because we were so focused on coming home and starting ourselves here.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a very, very controlling environment. Everything's good, but you can understand how it has to be. Yeah. You know, you can only just look at the leak that was for Britain's Got Talent, you know, and all the controversy around that. But it's not, as Carl said before, we're both very creative. We've both got our own ideas about how we do things. And working in that type of environment, you don't get that freedom. It's very black and white, and it's, you know, there are rules, and it's not the right environment for us to work in. But like I say, as a show, it does work great. I'm not too sure how long it's going
to
last.
It's all about marketing, basically. It provides a fantastic platform to market an artist for a certain period of time. But once that marketing platform's gone, and this is why so many of the artists do disappear, it's because they go out of the consciousness, and that's all it really is.
You've heard, you know, there are criticisms that it's a cutthroat industry and there is a shelf life for some artists. You know, I mean, obviously we've got the likes of Dave Bowie and you know, people of his calibre who are exceptional. They're special, you know. But then you've got the band that we're not allowed to mention. And, you know, where are they now? I don't know. I mean, are the big...
We've always had that, and we'll always have that.
It's always going to be that.
You know, I think that there's a different type of problem now. You mentioned someone like David Bowie. I mean, David Bowie was signed in 1969 to RCA Records, and they made Space Oddity, Man Who Sold the World, Hunky Dory, and then Ziggy Stardust. Now, those first three albums were critically acclaimed, but you couldn't give them away. No one bought them. Nobody bought those first three albums. It was only when Ziggy Stardust came out in 1972, 73, that launched his career. You know, because he'd had a hit with Space Oddity as a single, but only because of the lunar moon landings, whatever it is. And then what happened was RCA then remarketed his whole back catalogue. Today, if he was signed to RCA, he'd have been dropped after his first single. So you wouldn't have even had David Bowie. So that's the problem you've got, really. And that's going back to what I said before, why illegal downloading's great, because it's the punk rock of today in many ways, because it's the bit that the industry don't like. But it's about how do we bring our talent to market then? How do we find a way to do it? Which is why, you know, it's Jen and Carl are doing a sterling job, really, because it is really about... Managers have almost become the A&R of the industry now. They've got to A&R their talent. They've got to get them to a state where they're market ready, really. So it's a bit like, if you think about in the past, you were almost allowed a research and development phase for your artists. But because there was so much money swilling around in the business, that research and development phase could last 3 or 4 years. Now you've not got that.
So there's no cash.
So the managers now have to get their product to a stage. Sorry to call your artists a product, but that's kind of what they are. You've got to get them to a stage where they're market ready, so that when we put them out in the market, they're ready to go, and they're ready to go. You know, and they're not kind of, doing drugs 23 hours a day. They're not kind of, they're not playing at it, really. That they're absolutely ready to tackle what it is and go in full force, really, to give them the best chance of return on the investment.
Well, exactly, because most of the time, we're asked for the album, they say, right, if you've got the album, if you've got the product ready, we're also asked to present the marketing and the branding plan as well behind the whole thing, and that just puts into context exactly what Dave just been saying.
And that's the A&R sphere, because they don't want to take any risks anymore. No. It's all about, we've got to get some cash back on this, and we've got to get it quick.
As an artist manager now, you take on everything. You don't just take over looking after the act and putting them towards a record label. You take on everything now, like we were saying, the market, and you've got to have a full product ready to take for a record label to even look at you. They won't even let you through the door. They won't answer the phone or the email unless they know that there's something there.
You've got to have confidence in your knowledge that you've got it right.
Completely, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Wow.
That's why it's a lot harder now. But on the same, you know,
it's more exciting because it does give you more to do, and you're not just focused on the day to day management of an artist. You're not running around wiping bums and
it's just different
like
as well. Like, you know, it's a bit like us saying it was great when I was young, you know, and all that. And I think that's always dangerous to say. It's just changed.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it really. You can't fight it. That's the way it is. So you've got to get on with it with
exactly.
the way it is really. You know?
The likes of Duffy. Duffy had the big hit a couple of years ago. Duffy looked like she came from nowhere, but was actually...
She's about 52, isn't she?
Yeah, she was signed to a management company who brought in writers and producers and was actually worked on for about 3 years before that.
Nurturing her
out. Made money from that. And then she put out a second album, Torturing You Better, put out a second album with different producers and writers, and it bombed, and she's gone. But it's that sort of model. How can we get something ready for
one
that?
Of those irritating voices, though. Great song, you know, I was never a big fan on
She is 52, by the way.
Anyway, let's move on from the bitching here, and Piccolini.
That's not bitching, it's a fact.
Okay, all right. We're almost coming to the end now. I mean, we've had some amazing chat here this morning, and I think people are going to realise that the music industry has changed, and it's not as, it's possibly as easy as it was. There certainly doesn't sound as though there's the resource and the access to finance that there has been in the past. I'm just keen, finally. And it's literally a 5 second soundbite on what you think the future of music for Liverpool is. Start with you, Dave. And it's 5 seconds.
The future's bright.
The future's music. Kevin.
I think it can only be positive. Things like UNESCO will help move us forward.
Yeah. Jen.
I just think it's going to get bigger and better.
Okay.
Carl. It's all about emerging talent, and there's a lot of it in Liverpool.
Excellent. What a fantastic, fantastic morning. Thank you very much indeed. We're just about finished now. And don't forget, don't do anything Frank wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.